In the autumn of 1935, Frank Oppenheimer returned from 2 years of study at Cavendish Laboratory in Cambridge, England, and accepted a tuition scholarship to complete his graduate work at Caltech. Robert's old friend Charles Lauritsen agreed to serve as Frank's thesis advisor. Frank immediately plunged into research on beta-ray spectroscopy, a topic he had already studied at Cavendish. "It was very nice to be a beginning graduate student knowing what you wanted to do," Frank recalled. Robert was still dividing his time between Berkeley and Caltech, spending the late spring every year in Pasadena, where he stayed with his good friends Richard and Ruth Tolman. The Tolmans had built a whitewashed Spanish-style house near the campus, and in the backyard were a lush garden and a one-bedroom guest house which Robert occupied whenever he was in town. Robert had met the Tolmans in the spring of 1929, and that summer the couple had visited the Oppenheimer Ranch in New Mexico. Robert would later describe the friendship as very close. He admired Tolman's wisdom and broad interests, broad in physics and broad throughout. But he also admired Tolman's extremely intelligent and quite lovely wife. Ruth was then a clinical psychologist completing her graduate training. For Oppenheimer, the Tolmans made a sweet island in the Southern California horror. In the evenings, Tolman often hosted informal dinners attended by Frank and other Oppenheimer friends like Linus Pauling, Charlie Lauritsen, Robert and Charlotte Serber, and Edwin and Ruth Euling. Often Frank and Ruth would play the flute. In 1936, Oppenheimer lobbied vigorously to obtain Serber an appointment in the Berkeley Physics Department as his research assistant. The department chairman, Raymond Burge, only very reluctantly agreed to allocate Serber a salary of $1,200 a year. Over the next 2 years, Oppie tried repeatedly to get Serber appointed to a tenure-track position as an assistant professor. But Burge stubbornly refused, writing another colleague that one Jew in the department was enough. Oppenheimer was unaware of this remark at the time, but he was not unfamiliar with the sentiment. If anything, anti-Semitism in polite society was on the rise in America during the 1920s and 30s. Many universities had followed Harvard's lead in the early 20s and imposed restrictive quotas on the number of Jewish students. Elite law firms and social clubs in major cities like New York, Washington, D.C., and San Francisco were segregated by both race and religion. The California establishment was no different on this score from the East Coast establishment. Still, if Oppenheimer could not aspire to become, like his friend Ernest Lawrence, a part of California's establishment, he was happy where he was. "I had decided where to make my bed," he recalled, and it was a bed he was content to be in. Indeed, never once in the 1930s did he revisit Europe or even, aside from his summers in New Mexico and trips to the Ann Arbor Summer Seminar, leave California. When Harvard proposed to double his salary if he moved east, he brushed the offer aside. Twice in 1934, the newly formed Institute for Advanced Study in Princeton tried to lure him away from Berkeley, but Oppenheimer was resolute. "I could be of absolutely no use at such a place," he wrote his brother. "I turned down these seductions, thinking more highly of my present jobs, where it is a little less difficult for me to believe in my usefulness, and where the good California wine consoles for the hardness of physics and the poor powers of the human mind." He thought that he had not grown up, but had grown up a little. His theoretical work was flourishing, in part because classes took up but 5 hours a week, and that left him a lot of time for physics and for a lot of other things. And then he met a woman who would change his life.